Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, New York City's independent theater podcast. Maybe it's because of the strangeness of the moment that we're in right now in the United States, or maybe it's just me projecting onto almost all of the art that I experience. But it seems like so much of the theater I've been seeing of late is speaking very directly to current events. Case in point, a play that's all about the spread of information and strata of class, like Mark Jackson's Messenger No. 1, currently being produced by Hunger and Thirst Theater. I spoke to some of the artists after the show. I'll let them introduce themselves. Take a listen.
I do like to have everyone's name on the mic, so we'll go just around the circle. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm Hondo Weiss Richmond.
And what did you do on this here show?
I directed this here show.
And what is this here show?
This here show is Messenger No. 1 by Mark Jackson.
Awesome.
I'm Emily Kitchens, and I'm playing Messenger No. 3.
I'm Natalie Hegg, and I'm playing, I was trying to remember, I think it's actor No. 2, but it consists of Iphigenia, Trojan Maiden, Electra, and the Furies.
I'm Dan Morrison. I am playing Agamemnon, Orestes, and a secret character.
Yeah,
you have to see the show to get the third one.
I'm JC Ernst. I play Messenger No. 1.
And I'm Patricia Lynn. I'm the artistic director.
Awesome. Okay, so Messenger No. 1. With a title like that, we don't get too much information, and I think that's by design in terms of how the show is written. I love the perspective here. This is like a Greek Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in a small way. Who wants to? Although maybe that's like the stupid tagline from somebody who's just seen it. How do y'all describe the show to somebody who, you know, come see my show? What do you tell them it is?
That's a pretty good description. It is...
Just came up with that.
Wow.
I'm an indie theater genius because I run this podcast.
Impressive. No, how I explain it is it's a new ancient Greek tragedy from the viewpoint of messengers, you know, who usually just come in to say their piece and then they're excused and you don't hear from them again. But this revolves around them and the way they see the world and how they deliver their messages. So that's kind of how I explain it in a very much more long-winded way.
Yeah. Which turns it into a lot of... I'm going to just go right for it. There's a lot of class in here. It's like a play about class.
Yeah, for sure.
Is that something you mind, Hondo, or is that just something that was there and that I'm, you know, my Marxist politics are grabbing out of the show?
I think that we leaned into it. It definitely is something that Mark wanted the play to be about. He made a point of writing a play where even the way language is used between the messengers and the royals is really different, so that you hear a quality of language that reflects the class difference between them. And so I think we had a lot of fun playing with just sort of what the dynamics were between the people who were in power and the people who were disenfranchised, but obviously have some power because they're controlling the flow of information.
And then that brings us to the other major component of the show, information. I really enjoyed seeing the way the different messengers would deliver the same message when we got that kind of dichotomy going on early in the show. It's like, oh, that's what this play is about. And it really, I think, kind of carries through, which Hondo and I said off mic earlier, you know, feels incredibly timely in March of 2017. I'm finding everyone right now in independent theaters doing shows that are resonating super strongly with the moment. And it's almost always by accident, which is really incredible. So this play is not new. I'm guessing you decided to produce it before we entered the Dark Ages.
Correct. We picked it back in the summer.
So how weird is it that you're having this crazy, again, resonance with the current political moment?
It was kind of just an, I don't want to say amazing coincidence, because I don't want to call this political climate amazing, but
the fact that work can talk to it is really great.
I mean, we did the first read through back in January, and I heard the play in a completely new way. And we had been talking about it before we started rehearsals with that, oh my God, this is becoming such a timely piece. This is becoming much more topical and resonant. And then you hear it out loud and it's just, it kind of hits you like a ton of bricks. And then you watch them do it and it hits you like a different ton of bricks.
Bricks coming from the other direction.
They're just everywhere. So many bricks. But yeah, we were kind of fortunate in that we can do this piece now and have it speak on so many different levels and still speak on like just a classical theater level. This is a new ancient Greek tragedy, and so we're going to resonate in that way too. So the bricks can come from more directions than just one.
It seemed like the summer, which is when Patricia and Jordan first reached out to me about the play, that the play's investigation of how information is used to determine justice and survival and power and control already felt really sort of felt exciting and felt like it was speaking to the moment, with social media becoming more and more a huge part of how people get information. And then as fake news and alternate facts and everything became even more of a sort of fraught aspect of our everyday life over the past 3 or 4 months, it just has, I've felt very fortunate and excited that we've been able to be in the room and to be making a play that feels connected without, you know, we're not shoehorning the play into doing something that it isn't meant to do. It just happens that this play, which is 17 years old, really is speaking to what's happening now. And that feels, has felt very exciting to me from the director's standpoint. And I think you all have felt sort of activated by that from the inside.
I was hoping to get an actor's perspective on that, because it feels like it's such a, you know, it's one of those things that I'm sure you're all smart people and you can feel that this has this other outside the room sort of connection, and I'm reaching for the word to use there, but that it has this connection to the outside world. But at the same time, as an actor, your job is to be on the script and to be in the room with these other people. Do those things talk to each other? Did that question make any sense?
It did.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
No, I was just saying, yes, that question did make sense. And to you?
And yes, in this show, the two of us actually are talking heads together. Natalie and I, are both playing the swells, which are the upper class citizens of this
play.
Love
that term, too. It's so great.
Mark,
yes.
Jackson.
Mark Jackson. And beautifully delivered by the messengers. Sitting in those roles in this period of time is an interesting standpoint, because you instantly are hated and yet envied, in a sense that it's to be of a status like that, especially in this time period. You watch these people in the tabloids and news, and with everything that's going on politically, as well as everything that's been going on throughout, 2000, this was also like the Bush administration. So there's a lot of ties throughout, you know, society and things like that that have come into play. So it's really interesting to kind of stand on that precipice and own that and watch these people scurry around you, and to know that the voice of every man is the one that's not being heard exactly every single time that these people are trying to make these huge moments. And there's some lines in there that are saying, they have swords, but we are the word. What can we do? They change the world. We are just...
We only have words, they have daggers.
Yeah, we have words, so it's interesting being the people who destruct the world to make history and news and the way it changes. I can't speak to anything else on that, but it's an interesting standpoint of being somebody who is not able to change the world and play a character like that.
You can change the world, Dan.
I believe in you.
There's something that as we're like running the show and as we've had an audience that I'm very aware of that I think pertains to what you're asking, and it's like there's no hiding in our space, in our play, in our characters. in our conversation with the audience. And I think, as playing a messenger, you know, that is something that's being asked of me, is to tell the truth. And I feel that very immediately. It is another like sort of tagline thing that I find myself saying to people is, it's a very epic play and a very honest play, and it sort of accordions in and out like that. And I'm in a lot of moments that feel very vulnerable. And, you know, I am talking to you right now. There's no hiding that. And our space is sort of also like supporting that kind of intimacy.
Thrusting it upon us.
Wow. Good up. Yeah, thank you. Somebody else caught that. Well played, sir.
He hit her humor.
Up the puns. Natalie, were you about to say something?
Well, I was going to say, so when we had read it this summer, the main things that kind of jumped out to me, I was like, this is such a fantastic play. And the things that mainly came out for me were the difference in class structure and also, you know, getting to actually hear every man's story. But then the election, like most people, hit me like a truck. Well, not most people, but a fair amount of people hit me like a ton of bricks, because I was just so surprised that that many people voted for Trump. So it made me almost even more interested to play sort of one of the Trumpian villains, to be like, what is in their head? Do you know what I mean? Like, there is a reason that people are asking for that, and to kind of like dig a little deeper than the caricature. And I thought, especially with Electra, I don't know if it would have resonated as much during rehearsals, but because of what's happening now, especially the fact that she is a woman trapped and how that makes her spin out and do things, really any of those bits of text really popped for me. And, you know, I'm not sure if that would have as much before, but...
And also this thing, I think that the play really cares about all of its characters, including the people who are higher class or who are part of the House of Atreus. I mean, it seems like every single character is fighting for survival in one way or another.
Yes.
You know, maybe Agamemnon comes in on top when he shows up, but pretty much everyone else is scrapping and trying to take care of themselves and find...
Some with more sympathy than others, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but it doesn't feel as though... even if there's humor, more humor mined from some characters than others, I don't think the play is really at the expense of any character. At least I'd like to think that we've approached it in such a way that we're really pursuing a truthful embodiment of the whole range of people in the play.
Speaking about the approach, we referenced the thrust nature and how Emily mentioned how you're looking in the eyes of people as you were talking to them. Has that created any sort of interesting moments with audience members that you would love to share some?
I think the messenger should probably talk, the people who play the messenger should talk about this, because they're as the swells. Orestes and Electra, we don't talk to
you don't, yes.
The people.
And that's very it's very obvious.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agamemnon and Clytemnestra do, because they don't care. They own everybody who walks into that space. So it's really interesting being not like looking above everybody, which also feels like it's the stance that we've all kind of had as kids, being like, don't look at those people. These, you know, like, you are above them, so like, look above them. So we're trying to look above them.
Well, and it helps to create that accordion. I love that you described this as an accordion. It really helps to create that feel.
Yes.
When it's the two of you, the matricidal twins over here, like, it's a very different scene when all of a sudden we have these just messengers running around, and they're running right through us, and then standing next to you and talking to you and giving you this message. I always ask these sorts of questions whenever people talk to the audience, because I love when audiences are like, I don't know what to do about this. And I was hoping there was some fun stories, or like, have you had weird reactions at all?
I wouldn't say weird. I've had really positive, like, people have been answering me full-throatedly about something.
Yes, people have talk
cool.
to you.
Yeah, I mean, yes. just, you know, I ask them a question, they do it. But I really, I think this intimate space really helps with this play be, I mean, these makes these characters be a lot more honest. Because there's no, like has been said, there's no hiding. And so it is, you earnestly talk to them. It's not like playing to them, you know, like speaking hypothetically to them, you know, you looking into their eyes and being like, well, is she still gonna like me? I don't know. What do you think? Yeah, some people really get into that and other people really want to hide from it.
Immediately turn and like, oh, look what's going on over on that side of the stage.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I think it's nothing crazy yet, but, you know, just people that want to be included and people that are just dying not to be included. But there ain't no escape in this.
I was a little worried tonight because at the top of the show, when I'm behind, you know, getting ready to come on, and in the announcement, it says, you know, the actors will be using the whole space. Like, please put, you know, your belongings under your chair and, you know, keep your hands in. And this woman goes, oh, my God. Ah, really? Oh, my God. And I was like, oh, no. She is not having it. I'm not sure exactly what she was very offended by being told she needed to, like, stay within her
all hands
space.
Within yeah. It may have been our first show or our second. I think it was our first, but a woman was sitting in one of the upstage left seats here closest to one of the main places that people come in and out, and she heard that announcement and she looked around and then she shifted one seat over to get further up the aisle. She wanted to be nowhere near it.
That
audience member definitely is one of the ones JC fits in the category JC was describing, where she the whole time looked like she would have liked to be in the dark and to be about 10 rows back. And here, there's only 2 rows, and most of the audience is at least partially illuminated because the room is small and we're using every corner of it.
Yeah. Yep, spill's gonna
come
happen.
Come in your spiffiest of duds.
And you should come see the show.
But on the other side of it, I had one of the best audience member experiences in that I was sitting more in the center section, so the side sections could really see me, and because I'm in the front of house before the show, people knew I was involved with the show. So without giving anything away, during one of our character deaths, I had an audience member turn and look at me and give me a thumbs up. She was just like, oh my God. Yes, I like how you did that. And I was just like, great, I'm so happy for you.
But place over there.
Right, yeah. But she was just, it was like that's she great. Wanted to share that moment because
yes.
it was like the audience is a part of this experience and it's just like, yes, this person should have died. I'm so happy. What's going to happen next? It was great.
Come find out what happens next. I don't know, you have something to say? Oh, I was going to, oh, no. Emily, I'm totally going to
I was going to say, well, this is another reason you should come see it. I feel like in there's no like barometer, right, for what is a successful night or something, but sometimes at the very end you feel like when the lights come down, you feel like, and then they come back up, we've all been a part of this together. It's mm-hmm. like this shared experience that we've all had, and you feel that very palpably because it's an intimate experience.
See, now I'm really glad that you shared that. It's a beautiful way to end this.
Yes.
Come and be in that beautiful shared experience with all of these lovely folks. We are at the Paradise Factory in the basement. Is there a particular name to this?
Paradise Factory.
In the basement.
Space.
Yeah, okay, cool. I didn't know. I've only been here a couple times.
The dungeon. 64 yeah. East 4th Street between Bowery and 2nd.
And y'all run through?
March 18th.
And tickets and more information can be found at
hungerandthirsttheater.com.
Theater with an R-E.
Always got to ask. Awesome. Thank you all so much. This is great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hondo, Patricia, JC, Emily, Natalie, and Dan, for hanging out after the show to chat. You can catch Messenger Number 1 at Paradise Factory, 64 East 4th Street in Manhattan, in the basement space, through March 18th, 2017. Head to hungerandthirsttheater.com, that's theater with an R-E, for a link to tickets and more information.
Thanks to you for listening into the podcast. If you dig it, please give it a like on Facebook, facebook.com/GoSeeASHow. Follow at GoSeeASHow on Twitter and rate or comment on the show's iTunes page. Until next time, go see a show.
Come see a show!
That's the name of the podcast.